Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today we're going to talk about UFOs, just straight up UFOs. Now, obviously, I've made a lot of alien episodes. I've even made an episode about building your own UFO. I've talked about all of the psychological sort of implications of actually, you know, aliens coming down to this planet. Did the Roswell crash, which I have to say made me a believer. Something happened. But UFOs, it's really interesting because the question has evolved over time. When I was a kid, they would ask you, do you believe in UFOs? And obviously what they're doing is they're asking a much broader question of, do you believe in extraterrestrial life? ETs. Okay. Then there's the question of, do you just believe in aliens, regardless if they can reach Earth? What's really odd to me about that question is basically, in my opinion, the only question being asked is, are you a batshit religious person? That's all it means to me. No, I am not batshit religious. Oh, okay, good. Because it is only the batshit religious people of the world that would ever think for a second that there wasn't life out there in the universe. And I don't give a shit what you think. If you think it's a firmament dome, whatever. You're basically saying that you deny the access of life to any mass, energy, soul energy, whatever, in the universe. You must be so short-minded, so myopic, so fragile, and have such a goddamn ego that you think that life wouldn't exist. Life can't exist. Man, I won't even share this with anybody. Me. Right? Now, consequently, I have probably not met a single human being in my lifetime that doesn't believe that life exists somewhere else. I'm not sure. You know, you think you have until you think about it, and you're thinking, nah. No, I don't think I've ever met anyone who said, no, I think it's just us. But until you ask the question, you don't know if the guy sitting next to you has that belief system or not. But what was really interesting about the question is that if you go down the path of believing it is true, then, you know, we get this opportunity to split it up a little bit. Well, okay, let's just see how smart you are. See how, and you know, a lot of these guys get it. It's all a big pissing contest. You know, it's, have you researched as much as I have? And so then there's the UFO question, which we'll get back to pure UFO, but I'm setting this up because I'm going to try to keep this as pure as possible. Now, there's some folks that have done the calculations on the universe. It's theoretical size, of course, claiming that they can see the edge of the universe. Ha, 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 ha. And then they just do the math, and obviously there would be billion, trillion, gazillion times a trillion other life forms out there. And as long as gravity has anything to do with their evolutionary composition, whether that be by the hand of God because he created gravity, or it's just the way it is with ethereal winds creating negative pressures between objects, then bipedal and quadrupeds and fish, birds, well, it's all mathematical, right? So we should find a blue jay on Mars or something like a blue jay. We should. It's just math. Math made everything. Consequently, no one really explains why, you know, we don't really have, you know, two separate species growing up on this planet, isolated away from each other, looking identical, because there's so many variables to comprise us. But I do believe that bipedal and quadruped is a result of gravity and the way it actually pulls down single cell and then multi-cell entities. I explained that in the episode 2 of evolution. But to finish up here, some folks will go the NASA route and just come up with a piece of paper and what they think the equation is, and then the other folks will come out with sort of theories. You know, based on claimed observable things, I saw a UFO in Omaha, Nebraska, or whatever, they'll start to say, well, they're here, and if I believe that they're here, then I have to tell a story. It completely explains why they're here. What would they be doing here? It would almost seem that, like at some point, the observable world wouldn't be so inquisitive. You know, like we're one planet. We have something pretty awesome going on here. But you have to think, well, okay, if this is some mathematical anomaly, but it does happen, and these folks are able to find an atom in a haystack, then obviously they're pretty good at it. And they can find a bunch of planets like this. And then, you know, there's obviously no reason why they really should be seen, because they have incredible technology. I guarantee you, 50 years from this day of this recording, the United States military, if it still exists, will have stealth technology announced to the world. It already exists, okay? I firmly believe we have vehicles that are stealth. We have human beings that are stealth, although it's very delicate how you operate these vehicles and how you wear the outfits. But we have predator stuff. And so in 50 years, we're going to have invisible jets flying over. In 50 goddamn years. You know, if they can hide the sound from the thrust of the engines, or not use turbine combustion engines. Mixing metaphors. But we won't be able to know that our government's there. Do you realize that? And do you realize that they could already be doing that to this day? I mean complete stealth. Now, I don't know how you deal with penetrating a cloud, that sort of thing. So maybe you can only fly over blue sky areas. Maybe chemtrails are a big defense mechanism. But it really doesn't make any sense. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, well, dude, they're breaking us in. They're breaking us in. All right. Let's go with that theory. Because before Hollywood had computer-generated imagery, I might believe you. Because, well, you know, what do we have for alien storylines? What do we have for alien things? We had War of the Worlds, H.G. Wells, performed by Orson Welles and friends. It freaked everyone out. We had The Day the Earth Stood Still, Forbidden Planet. I mean, those are the serious ones. Of course, we had Buck Rogers and that kind of stuff as well. But there's no sense in pulling cartoon versions of this into the mind. So you might think, well, okay, yeah. And, you know, they're different. The real ones are different than the ones that we portray in movies. We have now dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of science fiction movies. Either they be really fun indie movies or super-duper professional productions like Independence Day and all these other crazy films. So Hollywood in itself has the ability to sway our opinion one way or the other. As we talked about a lot in the past, you know, Arthur C. Clarke, who was the famous, you know, one, he was the famous scientist to really theorize the geocentric orbit. But he also wrote 2001 A Space Odyssey, 2010, 3001, and a series of other books. But his whole thing was about aliens kind of coming to help us. That's a big deal. It's a big twist and a turn from what Hollywood has to do, which is alien bad guy. Always an alien bad guy. Whether it be they're not really trying to hurt us and body snatchers, but that's just simply the way they spread across the universe, is they put these little pods that then take over whatever form of life they bump into, etc., etc. The big question I have, now sort of believing that something is going on here, is why have they not made contact? And I'll try not to regurgitate everything about Star Trek, but again, Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry came up with the Prime Directive and Next Generation, which simply says, we don't make contact with a species of another planet until they have achieved warp. Because at that point, they will be joining society in a galactic sense, and they need to learn the rules before they do so. Brilliant freaking idea. I mean, the interesting thing about the Prime Directive is that Gene Roddenberry pulled it out of nothing because it compares to nothing that we have on planet Earth. We don't have any rules like that, right? We have these amazing tribes living in the rainforests of South America. And Brazil, who during the Olympics sold out to climate change, has sold their entire rainforest to China to be absolutely clear-cut by the Chinese, thus removing the one conversion tool that takes CO2 and makes it oxygen. And then they have the audacity to run a global warming fake bunch of bullshit during the Olympic intros. Unbelievable. But they don't have any prime directives for contacting lost tribes. We don't. Not that I know of. I've seen whole specials on it. Photographers are able to go in, give them things. One of the famous pictures, I posted it, I believe, on the Deep Thoughts Radio Facebook page. But it's of that tribe that paints themselves red in South America. And it's a helicopter shot or a plane shot or something. Really amazing shot of these folks and their body paint all over them. You can see husband, wife, kids. And, you know, the caption off the internet is that this tribe has never been discovered by modern man. Well, a little girl's holding a kitchen knife. And over to the right is a ceramic pot on the ground. So someone's gotten in there and given them shit, right? So it's what I think is it's brilliant. You know, it's brilliant that someone thought it through. That's why science fiction is so fun. And what's interesting for me is that, you know, we tend to believe that the $60 million a day that goes to NASA is money well spent. That they're inventing things that help us out in our daily lives. Ballpoint pens can write upside down. Let me tell you, folks, and listen up close. Those days are long, long gone. Okay? The only thing that NASA helps, if anything, is how to bomb a wedding in the Middle East in the middle of the day with no one else there. From a satellite technology, you know, point of view. They are helping the military 100,000% to kill people and to enslave the rest of us. That's where the $60 million a day goes. All right? You want to inspire kids? Pay writers. Pay for television shows. Pay book writers. Pay television and film writers. Put giant budgets into these films. And you will have the thinkers of the world invent and role play the scenarios that we actually want to be a part of, right? Including potentially luring these UFOs down to the surface because we as a species have actually matured to a point where we're ready to say hi. Do you believe in UFOs, they say. Well, now I shared a previous episode, but this is a good point to just reiterate here. My grandmother, by the age of 8... said she would see, and this is 1920, she would see flying cigars in the sky. Her and her sister, who I believe her sister's a couple of years older than her. Yeah, this is before anything of such design was known to man, right? We weren't flying big, you know, Hindenburgs at the time. But she said they were dark, and they would just fly. And again, she felt, I could tell you, just looking her in the eye, knowing her my entire life, I was probably in my early 30s by the time she told me this, she looked at me like, I feel like an idiot telling you this. And she never told me a tall tale the entire time she was alive, not even close. She lived through the Depression and those kind of things weren't, that sort of personality was burned out of human beings during the Depression. My buddy's father was a test pilot, was flying high atmospheric jet. I guess he was very high, above 40,000 feet. And for the decade of which this happened, which I guess would have been in the 60s, he said a gigantic, you know, 20, 30-foot disc came up to him with strobing lights around the outer edge, toyed with him, and then flew off. He said he was never more terrified because he thought this thing looks like a machine, but it's behaving like an animal, and it could easily have bumped my wing, and at the speed I'm going, at the altitude I am, just disturbing the thermals and the air pressure on my wing, I would have died. And he waited till his deathbed to tell his son. These are people that I believe. One of my neighbors actually told me another story when I first moved here, which is very interesting. Yeah, but it sounds like someone else's story. But, you know, his uncle supposedly was hired to paint some of the hangars for the Air Force. And he made it sound like it was Area 51, but it was, if not, it was something very similar to that. Would have been around here somewhere. This is California, so you know, go to Arizona, New Mexico area pretty easily. But they said that they were finishing up some painting up in the rafters, and the doors open, and they reloaded the warehouse full of several crashed UFO ships, and one that was fairly pristine. Sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? When I was a kid, they used to ask the question, and I had a dream when I was a child, about 9 years old, and I dreamed that I had seen this sort of close encounter type, you know, ice cream cone thing flying through the sky, and that we all followed as neighbors. And then I, for whatever reason, you know, when you're a little kid, you tell little tall tales, you know, but I had blended that dream with reality during that time. Of course, you always try to impress your buddies. So I felt like I had experienced this thing in photoreal color, you know, and it obviously never occurred. So later in life, you know, when you clean out the closet of all these little tales you made when you were a child, I got to the point where I was like, well, I don't believe I have personally ever seen a UFO. The only thing I did see as a teenager, probably about 16 years old, laying on a trampoline, trying to look for meteor showers, you know. And there was a plane, you know, with its, you know, green light on one side, red light on the other side, a little red light on the tip. It looked like a triangle flying in the sky. You know, follows complete aviation design. And where I live, it's 100 miles from the Air Force Base in Wichita, military Air Force Base. And I can still see it to this day, just like it just happened a few minutes ago. This thing did the most precise 180 turn I've ever seen in my life. And it did it, if the plane was 1 inch wide in your visual spectrum, it pulled a 180 with a radius that was half an inch from the path that it ended up going back in the other direction. And it just turned on a dime. Like it was like a race car on a race car track, but super duper hairpin tight. And there was no loss in speed, as I remember it. It wasn't like it slowed down. And I know now that those planes don't exist, that planes like that don't exist, you know. Really odd. So if anything remotely resembles an illogical flight path or my mind, it would be that one little moment on a trampoline. That was it. But otherwise, I have to take other people's words for it. So what's the big anomaly, right? What are UFOs? And I won't split hairs too badly, but the thing about UFOs, specifically, is they come in so many different shapes and sizes. And it seems to go in a bit of a trend, especially today. Now, back in the past, you have all these what clearly looked like somebody made an object, threw it in the sky, took a photograph of it. Then you have these guys that are paid off by the, you know, the TV show folks to say, oh, well, you know, I'm a photo expert and this is definitely real and da da da. And then you find it, you know, when you get older and Photoshop comes out and you become the expert, and then you scan photographs and you start looking at it. And then, you know, you find out that these intelligence officers who are photo experts and photo fraud experts, they're experts in things like, you know, forging money. But they have no expertise when it came to deciding whether or not a wheel cover is a UFO or not, right? So it's just really funny. I guess they were informed about the mechanisms of forgery, razor blading negatives, and then re-exposing them, looking for degradation and clarity. But in the end, pretty much every single documentary of UFOs where you have a photo expert probably before the year of 2000, just flush it all down the drain. Flush all that evidence down the drain. These guys are no better than you with a, you know, magnifying glass looking at a photograph on a light table. There's that guy in Europe. I think he's in the Netherlands or something. I should have his name on the tip of my tongue here, but very famous for having said he, you know, he got really close photographs of sort of the traditional hat UFO, the little sort of like LEDs lined around the bottom. And, you know, when you look at this shit, you just look at it and you go, wow, how is it that UFOs and the aliens that design them and make them seem to have a one-to-one correlation with the sort of apex of bad sci-fi design in Hollywood, right? You know, the shapes are primitive because bending steel is a sign of intelligence. If you want to look at a very interesting evolutionary process that Sid Mead taught me in car design, Sid has to go around the world talking about car design all the time. And he's taught me, he goes, you know, you can really see the evolution of man and design and mechanical aptitude because by looking strictly at the way that we can fold metal and the thickness of metal that we can fold. And so UFOs remain primitive and silly. And they end up getting, you know, disc-shaped. Now, even though there are photographs online and illustrations online of what people saw, of which my grandmother said she saw, the flying cigars, those have now matured into cylinders. They have, you know, they're not tapered on the end anymore. They just look like sort of rods, you know? And there's something, you know, Dune-ish about those structures. But where did the shapes of UFOs start? Right? You have these passages in Ezekiel. You have paintings in Europe where there are weird things in the sky. Behind, I guess, doesn't the Mona Lisa have a little anomaly in the back? Anything that was sort of biblical and cartoonish sort of has now been reassessed as potentially an homage or a clue that there have been at all times UFOs and that some folks know about them. But now those interesting, if you take every one of the anomalies that I know of, other than maybe some of the Aztec drawings that make it look like they're inside of these spaceships. You know, and again, the anomaly with the Aztec thing, because I've seen it, you know, the major one where the guy's inside a cockpit. And it does look like they actually have some flying ships. Is that the Aztecs were amazing, right? You know, all of their hieroglyphs are, for me, the most intricate, beautiful hieroglyphs that have ever been made on planet Earth. They are. You know, and usually to get a really articulated, gorgeous iconology or phonic-based alphabet, you have an extremely exceptional, brilliant people. And then, of course, for me, you know, that's where the sacrifices of babies and stuff all becomes revisionistic history to make them savages, right? Because Europe has to do that to folks. But the one thing I don't see from those Aztecs are things that they would have seen had they traveled to another place. Even traveling to the moon, traveling way up in the air. We don't see, I mean, to my knowledge, please correct me if you know something I don't know, but I haven't seen any Aztec illustrations that really call out the fact that we've been super high in space, we've been in space, and we've seen it all and done it all. So let's rewind back to why do we even get to see UFOs? And then we'll get back into the design for a split second. Again, the U.S. military in 50 years will have stealth completely released to the world. We'll be able to see what it looks like. And it won't be radar stealth, it'll be visual stealth. You'll be able to park a plane on a tarmac, and the goddamn thing's going to disappear. One way or the other, they've got a coating on it, a paint on it, a force field around it. Something will make it pretty much disappear. Okay. We have to assume that if any being can travel interstellarly, through hyperspace techniques, folding space techniques, interdimensional techniques. It doesn't really matter. Whether or not we have a firmament dome and there's a door that opens up every once in a while and this fleet comes in and goes out, whether that's happening, it doesn't matter. They have unbelievable technology, way, way, way beyond what we have. And I'm not just saying that because that makes them big, makes us small. We just, you know, to accomplish those things, it's a checksum for brilliance. You know, and you know, again, there's, I've written comedy books and sci-fi before. And I played with the species, and I, one of my little twists was that a particular species had figured out a heavy-duty technology and mastered it before they had figured out, you know, where their navel was. You know, there's anomalies like that. But, you know, back to the real world, we have to assume that they don't have to be seen. So the fact that we're seeing them implies one of two things. They don't care because it's their world and we're just living on it, or they want us to see them. I guess there's a third, which is that, you know, sort of a Douglas Adams spin, which is, it's just a rich kid, you know, driving his dad's car, and he happens to visit this place and all that stuff. But here's the thing. They don't stop, and they don't get out. Ever. You know, supposedly we have UFOs flying over crop circles. We have UFOs flying over desert communities. But they never stop. They never, ever, ever get out. And I mean in a way that the public can all say, wow, we're at the local softball game, my daughter's on first, and Jesus, this thing lands on, you know, pitcher's mound. It doesn't happen, does it? Like, ever. When they crash, they are always crashing in a place where, you know, the government can swoop in and find them first. The odds start to stack up against any reality of said scenarios. If they're flippant about their appearance, then they would be flippant about their union with us, their introduction to us. They don't seem to be. Now, I did a whole episode on alien abductions. Some people will say, oh, well, yeah, they do too get out of their cars and they come and grab us and they take us places. Well, I won't repeat that episode, but I'll just simply say we have zero credible evidence on this, right? I have in the last year had people come up to me and ask me very seriously, friends of mine or new acquaintances of mine, they'll say, well, do you believe in alien abductions? And they're not trying to be funny. They want to know, because I do so many shows, and all of your travels, what do you think? And we get to talking, but it all boils down to one thing. They name the hiker that disappeared for 4 or 5 days, right? And they say, well, since he disappeared, which really only translates to his friends couldn't find him, right? They didn't use an infrared camera with a helicopter looking all over the desert, right? That guy could have just hit out, had a fucking midlife crisis, and he's so embarrassed that he comes back and makes up this story. But that's where most people target themselves and say, this is the person that's very, very convincing. So, but some people need to be special, want to be special. And the more that we feel helpless, let me just digress into this for 1 second, but the more that we feel helpless as human beings, we sort of want to gravitate to stories that make us invincible, right? You know, there's all these men in the world that will get to their midlife crisis and they will make up stories about, you know, working for very powerful government agencies. And they were like a James Bond. What was it? The Gong Show guy, the Gong Show host, made up a story that he was, you know, working for the CIA. Well, look at the guy. Look at the guy. He's a goofy dude. He's a wonderful man, but he's goofy. He's small. He's vulnerable to the world. And imagine how he feels. I think he's still alive. But imagine how he feels today. Super vulnerable. I hope he's very wealthy from that show because it was a massive hit in the 70s. But the idea is, in the end, he looks back and maybe he's not proud of the amazing job he did on that show. He should. But so you put a little little tidbit on there. Oh, I was involved with the CIA and I was a hitman or whatever, double agent, ufologist, but whatever. He's some amazing guy. And then we all kind of, everyone reveres. And the way the story was left is you can't prove me wrong, so you just wonder forever. But then you look at me in awe as if I actually did that, right? Well, that's what alien abductions do. You're the chosen person to be abducted. Something is special about you, right? Hey, not everyone gets abducted, right? Let me make sure you understand. The reason why you haven't been abducted is that you're a standard person. You're an average to below average human. I'm special. That's how it goes. So for me, all the stories and all the anal probing and all this kind of stuff seems extremely man-made. So it does nothing to enhance my beliefs that UFOs are actually flying around. Now, what's also interesting about UFOs is that in my journeys, because I don't walk around asking the question, maybe I should, but I don't walk around saying, have you ever seen a UFO? Have you ever seen a UFO? Because the idea is that I'm trying to instigate a conversation that where could it go? You know, it always seems like a witch hunt, right? You know, do you believe in UFOs? Do you believe in abortion? You know, it's like one of those two things that go together where it's like, you know, that if anyone walked around asking about abortion, they're just looking for a fight, right? And people walking around seriously starting off a conversation asking about UFOs is probably a similar person. And it really has nothing to do with the actual answer, does it? Let's run down some scenarios of what the answer could be. Because it's not that hard. I mean, you know, I guarantee you, if we were in some intelligence agency sitting around a table with the most brilliant minds, the conversation is going to go very similar to this, unless someone in the room has evidence that we don't have about their existence, about UFOs. You know, they got a real surveillance camera footage of, you know, alien, you know, UFOs, windows and little creatures inside, and they know for a fact it wasn't some CG thing. Aside from that proof in the room, they're going to have to ask this question. You know, either we live in a true universe where it's infinite to some degree, the planets are all round. Doesn't really matter if we understand how everything works out, you know, whether it's electrical based or whatever. It's either they're coming from deep within the universe, which immediately becomes mind-boggling, right? I thought about this several times from sort of a writing standpoint. I thought, you know, the only way you find an Earth without literally building it, you know, I mean, if they didn't build Earth and put it in this particular orbit with a moon that's oversized, made from some other moon factory of white, you know, whatever, without them orchestrating our creation, which we'll do that once we get to that point. You know, we'll have several slarty bot farsts out there making it happen, right? But just finding this as an anomaly in the universe, man, I think that that's quite technically impossible without some incredible innovations in time travel and multidimensional travel and meaning you don't use an engine to get around in terms of any sort of vectoral thrust, right? It's not that you go super duper fast and you can do it better. Nah, I could give you the power to travel a trillion times the speed of light and it would still take you fucking forever to look for Earth if it was just a random occurrence in the universe. So outside of manufacturing Earths, which would be, you know, doing whatever you got to do to make a plasma ball, put a crust on, all this good stuff, which very well might be the way it happens. Finding one randomly would be tough. You'd have to send a freaking infinite armada of vehicles into space and have them not collide with each other, but they're exploring every nook and cranny. Because even just the size of the galaxy is, you know, to our magnitude, just as close to infinite as it gets. So what are the alternatives? Because that would mean, again, their technology would be phenomenal. right? That means they're building planets. They're putting things in place. And why would we ever see them? You know? If they're trying to create a pure sociological experiment with us, meaning don't tamper with what's in the Petri dish, then we would never see them. And they would never crash. And anybody who saw the crash would be eliminated. Brainwashed, whatever. The black, you know, the Men in Black gun thing. That's what would happen. Doesn't happen though, does it? For my flat earthers, well, it's kind of interesting. And again, flat earth, again, let's look at the two scenarios here, right? We have those of you who are biblical flat earthers and you think God, you know, has got a swimming pool up above. Because that makes sense. But yeah, this is a God-created thing, and again, you're being very selfish, right? There can't be any other beings in the universe. It's just you and God in this ball, sorry, this dome, and we're in here. But if it's God, it makes no sense for UFOs to be around, does it? If you believe in God and you believe in UFOs, then you're heliocentric, right? Now, again, there are some sort of silly, arbitrary statements that I hear all the time with no explanation, and people will say this shit with a straight face, which blows me away. They'll say, well, you know, UFOs are just archangels. Oh, okay. So that's how you pulled that together, right? I could just see, you know, Gabriel up there comes out, you know, he's got his Speedos on, as some hot chick behind him, and he's trying to figure out what car he's going to take today. You know, he's got the round one, he's got the disc one, he's got the cigar one, whatever. Sure, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. Magic. When I can't think of how something works, it's just magic. So now let's go back to dome made by somebody. An alien race. Perhaps another version of us, right? And we're just torturing ourselves. I would say torture, but we're not allowed to know where the hell we are, which seems like a sin all into itself, right? And so there's a dome. And I'm sure it has some sort of ventilation. I'm sure it has a mechanism by which those who created it can enter it. But then there's the big question of why travel in UFOs at all? Well, I think the answer would be is they're not human looking, that's for sure. Because if you look like a human, what would you do? You just walk in here. That's what you would do. Figure out a way to get the old TARDIS going from Doctor Who. And so you got a blue phone booth that shows up and you just walk out. Boom. Nobody knows the difference. But what if you're little gray men? And the females are tall, tan creatures. And their little slave race is these little round-eyed, pudgy, even shorter guys, two-footers. Well, that's going to cause a bit of a problem, isn't it? You're going to have to travel around in vehicles because you're not allowed to scare the living crap out of this indigenous species that has been developed inside this Petri dish. So then what would UFOs be? Sort of a tourist guide thing? Are we in a zoo? Are they super brilliant scientists who look down and they understand all the nuances of culture and war and scapegoating and racism and tribalism? Is that what they're getting off on? Or are they focused on the interspecies gene splicing? Well, we've discovered that so-and-sos don't like the other people, but these two seem to mate really, really well, and et cetera, et cetera. So they only need to hide if they don't look like us, to be honest. Or if whatever, speaking one of our languages is so difficult they can't learn how to do it, which seems hard to believe. So I've said the following thing like a dozen times in other alien episodes, but when it comes to filtering out the claims of people who say they've seen UFOs, we have to give it the Close Encounters test. And the Close Encounters test, it comes down to one scene. Richard Dreyfuss goes into the Air Force. He's trying to get some information on what he saw because he saw it and half his face is burned from seeing a UFO around his utility truck. And this bumpkin walks in and takes a salt shaker, throws it down the table, and says, you know, I once saw Bigfoot with a foot, you know, 42 inches long. You made a sound I would not like to hear twice. And then Dreyfuss looks around the room like, Christ, I'm never going to get the truth walking around with Jim Bob here who believes in Bigfoot. If someone is telling you that they've seen UFOs and they have no problem coming up with several other anomalies in their life, Bigfoot, ghosts, da-da-da-da, you're probably talking to someone who needs attention. And you should probably consider, you know, putting their story way back on the maybe shelf, if not the firmly in front of the false shelf. They have psychological issues that need more attention than any alien abduction or UFO experience, right? But for people like my grandmother, who was a very, she was a very fun-loving person, but when she wasn't, she was extremely practical, you know, she was utterly mentally scarred by the Depression. The fact that she waited till she was probably 80, 81 to tell me this, should give you a sign that when you have someone like that in your life telling you these things. My friend, who's 73 years old right now, you know, his father waited till his deathbed to tell him about this ship he saw. When you have situations like that, you have people that really saw these things. It freaked them out so badly that they really waited till the end of their life to share them with you. And if they don't have any history of, you know, being the old Frisbee from Twilight Zone, then you probably have some gold there. Now, a lot of people will split hairs. You know, I've talked about plasma balls. They're very, very real. They pop out of the desert floors, and they pop up in sequenced streams. And so you can get these balls of light, you know, these sort of Christmas tree lights in the sky, that then one by one they all fizzle out because they simply were birthed at this particular point. They spin for a certain duration, and then they go away. That's not a UFO. I mean, it's something flying up there, but it's plasma energy. And during the day when you see them, they spin and they're chrome because they reflect all of the photons back to the ground in the form of a chrome disc. Not a UFO. The Navy see these plasma balls fly all over the radar. They're traveling thousands of miles an hour and stopping on a dime and changing directions. It's all plasma ball energy, people. Very, very basic. But again, the government doesn't want you to know much about plasma because it really gets you towards a zero-point energy model, and they certainly don't want you to know that the center of the Earth is full of pure energy because that will tip off someone to grab it out of the Earth like Tesla did, and we won't have to pay for power anymore. We'll always have power. So let's ask the question we always ask when we end these episodes. Is it important that we know? I mean, could it be that, you know, they introduce, say, 4 dozen UFOs that fly around the world on a daily basis, and we see them all the time. And they go up on YouTube, everyone's taking pictures of them. Imagine that. Well, some of us would be shocked for a very short period of time. Some of us would be just jumping for joy. The religious xenophobes would cry, you know. They would probably immediately say the world was going to end and look at the angels flying around, usurping once again God, such that they are the only ones given the authority to interpret what you see as reality. At least some fanatics in Topeka, Kansas will be doing that for sure. But I think it would actually start to become sort of like, who cares? There'd be attempts to lure them to the ground, I'm sure. Some farmer would cut in his crop, he would cut a welcome sign, like they've done several times. But what do we have today? We have teenagers with 4K cameras in their pockets all day long. And the UFO sightings have nearly disappeared Right. There's a bunch of computer graphics students in every major university around the world that make it their thesis to create some shaky cam thing where a UFO is flying around the major city of which they are taking their classwork in. Mexico City is producing a lot of these very talented individuals. But you'll see them all over the place. And those of us in that business look at it and go, oh, yeah, yeah, you shook the camera so it would look more real. Yeah, that's now the way that we know it's fake, pretty much, right? There's never usually, I put it this way, of the ones that survive in the mindset of man, they never are taken from multiple angles. And that's always funny. The one over Wright-Patterson Air Force Base wasn't taken from multiple angles. You have a husband and wife standing right next to each other, and we're to believe that neither one of them yelled at the other one to get the other camera out. As long as one person was filming, it was okay. Yet with the two of them filming at the same exact time, the confirmation of it not being a hoax would have been in their bag, or a hell of a lot harder to prove otherwise, right? The only time I've really seriously believed that, you know, an alien craft has visited Earth and never made contact with mankind is in the anomalies around the interviews of those related to the Roswell crash. And you have to go see my Roswell episode to hear that, but it's in season two here. My mind still can't settle with the whole thing, right? That it would seem as if the James Ramey's of the world were telling the truth. His friends that were at the bridge game, when he brought the debris to the bridge game, a whole room full of people saw the little I-beams with the writing on them, the two or three different types of foil, the black plastic. So did his son in the kitchen floor. Something crashed. He found a part of it. And they showed it to people. And at the same time, it is impossible to believe that a UFO would crash anyway. It really is tough to believe, right? How could you have such technology and have an anomaly such that your vehicle crashes and blows up and kills part of its crew and all this other stuff? And they don't have some teleportation out. They don't have an ambulance team themselves, right? Because the story goes by the archaeologists that they crashed the night before. And they were sitting in the desert for 10, 12 hours before any humans found them. I mean, really, you don't have any beacons. You don't have any communication. The ship obviously survived in great part. So did the radio work? Catastrophic failure of supreme technology. Nice to know the gods can't fly their own planes, right? But maybe the whole thing is a hoax. Who knows? Maybe all the assertions against Roswell are correct. The I-beams with the writing are I-beams that were created using a tape made by a toy company in New York City. As an adult, I will simply tell you that if they exist, they will let us know when they want to let us know that they exist. And every other day between now and then, I must live my life, pay my bills, take care of my destiny, give to others, etc., etc. You know, the printing press killed the mythology of gods, right? Once the printing press came around, we didn't have any more messiahs. And I think that cameras inside cell phones have absolutely dismissed this avalanche of UFO sightings. And I think it's great. Because once you filter out all the noise, you definitely get close to whatever signal's left. I just hope that we're good with pure silence every once in a while. Is there life out there? Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, if we're in a firmament dome, I haven't said this particular thing. This is going to be a little homage to the flat earthers. If we're in a, and this is for your heliocentric folks that definitely do not believe it's flat, but if we're in some sort of matrix slash simulation, and regardless of what exact shape it's in, that means that we are subjugated to a much higher force slash brilliance and technique. So the idea that we would look out into the observable sky without actually going up 80 miles to see where we are as individuals and having to trust an organization such as NASA and JPL that have lied through their teeth to the point of putting every single one of those motherfuckers in jail because we haven't been able to verify anything ourselves. You could be simply staring at the deception. You could. As far as I know, the ISS has never filmed the moon. How fucking stupid is that? I mean, seriously, right? The South Stars, the way the sun goes around, everything that is argued between the two groups of flat Earth versus heliocentric, if you're in a simulation, you will both be able to think that you're correct, probably. Because it's a deception. And because you have a disposition to believe, you'll find what you need to look for. But if you're believing any paradigm, including UFOs, simply because your butt hurts, then you're sort of not invited to a normal adult conversation, right? You're merely defending the weak heart in your chest that can't contemplate something else. And hopefully before you die, hopefully decades before you die, you'll be able to grow up and have a conversation with the grown-ups. You know, you won't have the kiddie folding table over here where you sit with the other children and fight over frosting. You'll be able to come up here and eat a savory dish of truth, right? And when your heart starts hurting and you use stupid goddamn phrases like, well, I just can't believe, you know, you can't get over yourself, right? You can't get over your weaknesses. Once you get past that and you'll sit in a world with, you know, minds that are as brilliant as the ones that you admire. You know, if you're admiring UFOs or scientists or all this other stuff, hey man, open-mindedness is an attribute of a brilliant person. And closed-mindedness is really the fabric of a mob, right? Of the rule of the law of the jungle, really. When you see people sweat and they go into sort of their feral regression right in front of your face because a concept is coming across the room that they can't accept because, again, it starts hurting their fragile paradigm of existence. It's sort of why you don't talk to children about adult things. So don't talk to someone like that. Doesn't matter if they're in their 60s. If they're fragile with their reality, then you're looking at a child in a 60-year-old body. Don't be that guy. Don't be that girl. Be grown up, right? But I know you feel me. It's good to ask these questions every once in a while, isn't it? There's so many things that we think about that we simply just take for granted. You know, and I have to say this, from this point forward in your life, think about it like this. If somebody asks you one of these questions like this, and we define questions like this as someone asks you a question that's controversial, you just feel it being controversial, whether it be something as acidic as abortion or something as inquisitive as do UFOs or aliens exist. But it hits you in your chest and you have that tightness, that frustration of, well, you could have just started talking about aliens. You could have just started talking about UFOs. You could have asked a question, as if we both understand that these things are kind of a commonality in the universe. But instead, it became a tribalism question. It became, are you part of my group? Right? Because there's two ways that people ask you whether or not you believe in Jesus Christ. You know, they'll say, well, you know, you believe in Jesus, right? And then they'll say, well, are you Christian? Are you something else? You know? Luckily, in Orange County, it's all very, you know, people are very cautious and careful and friendly about it. But when you get asked one of these questions, put it to yourself, does it need more discussion? The question itself, the paradigm, what's really going on subtextually between you and the person? Like I said in a previous episode, someone starts a conversation about the weather with you and you haven't had a conversation, then that means I like you, let's talk. If you've already had 30 minutes of talk and they ask you about the weather in the middle of a 30-minute conversation, that means I got to go. There's subtext to the cause and effect of these things. So anyway, I know you get me. If you dig this series, please subscribe. If you like this particular episode, please like. You know, I'm not trying to pimp the show in a subscription-like basis. I really, really love the organic flow of things. There's all these folks that create shitty videos or even good videos, and they're just pimping the subscription and the liking right in the first 5 seconds. And it's sort of like when you watch a movie trailer and they try to tell you how great the movie is by giving you a bunch of, you know, bullshit movie reviews from rags you've never heard of, from people you've never heard of. That means they're super worried and they know the movie's a piece of shit. So for me, if I can't win you over through the words out of my mouth and the context and the subject matter, then I have failed you, and that's it, right? Hopefully out of the variety that I present, you guys can find something you like. But if I don't earn my keep, then I don't deserve your subscription. And that's just the way it works with me. So I appreciate every single person coming on board. Again, it's a variety show. You can find the website at deepthoughtsradio.com. If you do click the RSS feed, you will go to MKUltraRadio.com. That was a previous show, previous whole thing. Very political on that side. It has its own Facebook page. It is not related to this show. I'm just saying that because people are continuing to get confused between the two. So I'm going to say this like 4 or 5 times in a row. But anyway, I hope you're enjoying the weather that you have. Today is a February day, somewhere in the teens. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. And there's a pot on the ground, a ceramic laminated steel pot that's been reset that last part.